All right. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN 1212 on this May 3rd, a Wednesday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. Frank Sennett will be here a little bit later from Crane Chicago Business. We'll talk about this North Center or the North Chicago River development. I guess there are some aldermen throwing up some roadblocks there. So we'll kick that around with Frank. And then a little bit later in the program, well, let's say first hello to Terry Savage. Terry, welcome back.
So glad to be sitting in this chair.
I feel like it's been a long time since we've been in the same studio together.
Well, you travel the most, and then I tried to escape a lot of cold weather, so we're ships passing in the night, but I'm here now.
And we are now moored together for months and months and months.
I love it.
So there's a group called Business France, and they sort of foster, you know, Chicago business going to France or import, export, and all of that. So they've got an event coming up at, I think they're at Blue Sky later today. So we'll talk to someone who's going to be on the panel there.
Are you going to do that in French? I can do that. I can do that.
You
know, I lived in France.
Why don't you come? You can be our translator.
Moi, je parle français.
Okay. I don't know how well it would go over on the radio, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
Or else we'll just have a glass of French wine.
Okay. I'll do that, too. Coming up on Friday, we get the jobs report for April. But that's always preceded by a report from ADP, right? ADP's numbers are out today.
ADP prepares payrolls for real businesses. And there are those who think that real business is a more accurate predictor of what's really going on in the economy than government statistics. But they have ADP has a really good track record of coming out just a couple days ahead of the jobs report from the government. And today's report was a bit disappointing. I mean, nothing to cry about, but it showed weaker growth in new jobs. And that doesn't surprise me because look at the first quarter GDP, 0.7%. That's like barely break even. Perspective, you know, coming out of past recessions, we'd have 6% and 7% GDP growth. Hoping for a real economic recovery and strong growth this year were projections of maybe we'd have 3% or 4% first quarter, 0.7%. That means that jobs aren't growing strongly.
So ADP says 177,000 jobs created last month. Does it tend to be a little lower than the government figure?
No. It tends to be pretty accurate. So who knows whether we'll see a tick up in the unemployment rate. That, politically speaking, that would be rather annoying for all those folks sitting around in Washington. And I'm not sure that you could make a profound statement about it. It's just that there's a lot of uncertainty in the economy. There was a lot of hope at the end of the year. That has not so far translated into anything that you can spend. And
right.
So, jobs and the economy remain flat.
I told Bill and Wendy I was going to talk to you about this. The Pew Research Center came out with a poll today. And the question is, Republicans and Democrats have very different ideas about how you get rich. Okay, so if you are a Republican, you tend to think that hard work rather than a person's advantages in life make you wealthy. 66% of Republicans and Republican-leaning independents say hard work rather than a person's advantages has more to do with someone who is rich. 21% says personal advantages. For the Democrats, it's almost a carbon copy. Democrats and Democratic-leaning independents say 60% believe a person is rich because of what life handed them, and 29% say it is because they have worked harder. I suppose if you were to assign values, that might be the way it would break down. But I don't know how I feel about all of this.
Well, how do you feel?
I think that I benefited from my upbringing and my standard in life and my standing in life and my parents and all of that. So I think I do work hard or have worked hard, but I'm not taking credit for any wealth I've accumulated. You know what I mean?
Don't be humble.
No, it's not being humble at all. But, you know, there are these people who run around saying, well, I earn every dollar I ever got and all of that. And I think, well, let me put it this way. I think there are far more rich people who had money handed to them than there are rich people who created it from nothing. How's that?
That'd be an interesting proposition to test. First of all, you know, we live in a country where for the first 150 years of our existence, the whole goal... It's hard to think about that today now, but through the 1920s, the whole goal in America was to, quote, get rich. And we idolized Horatio Alger, for example, from, you know, the poor kid that grows up and makes fortune. And that wasn't a negative thing because people came Not everybody who came here, obviously, but people came to America who had maybe a different risk-taking gene. And so that was a very, you know, our country is dedicated to a couple of things. First of all, the proposition that all men are created equal.
Took us a while to get there.
And second, the idea with it, you have your right to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. Now, the interesting thing is, I split the line on this, whether you received it or you made it, because I think if we let all children start equally with the same education, the same health care, I think it's absolutely possible that anybody in America can grow rich today.
Yeah, I think maybe that's what I'm saying, too. I don't know.
Yeah, so I think I just don't think you can apply this broad brush because we aren't letting all children be created equal in America today.
Okay, if there were 10 multimillionaires standing over there in the Allstate Showcase studio, right, how many of them do you think would have made their multimillions on their own? Or how many would have had a leg up coming into it?
Well, let's look at the generations. Don't forget, you talked to an American studies major here. So, first of all, this is not the first time we've had a guilt trip about extremely wealthy people. Think of Rockefeller, Carnegie, and so forth. And what did they do with their money? They had foundations.
Right.
They left it and did wonderful things for America.
Are you in politics? You haven't answered any of my questions today.
No, I'm trying to get – I'm just – you're black and white, and I'm saying, first of all, it's part of the American goal. Sometimes it seems to get out of whack, but great fortunes have been built. Now, the 50s were the generation of people who came and built businesses, and the tech revolution has created more billionaires.
We got a break, but I think we're talking about two different things, because what I'm saying is – I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being filthy rich.
No, but I'm saying that a lot of people have created their money today – on their own, and we should idolize those stories, the Steve
right.
Jobs of the world. It's not all Donald Trump, who did start with a golden spoon
There's a show on National Geographic. We watched the first episode last night, Genius. It's about Albert Einstein, okay?
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to watch it.
It's okay. It's on demand. But so real quick, so I was interviewing a novelist, an Eastern European novelist a few years ago, and he talked about how in Eastern Europe, they idolize intellectuals.
Right.
Absolutely idolize intellectuals, and that's something that's completely lost here. Kind of the same
thing. And look
where
it's got them.
It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, and Terry Savage is bursting to say something.
Yes, I know what to put under your my pillow when
what?
You give it to Mom.
What?
My personal financial organizer.
So I think we've had this conversation before.
We have.
You talk about this at Mother's Day, and I always joke that it's, you know, you go, Mom, you're going to die soon, and so let's prepare.
No.
I know.
See,
I'm Wait, can
opposite.
I say one other? We're so distracted today. So I was talking about that book and the author I talked to who they revel in intellectuals. The name of the book is The Mathematician Shiva, and it's set up at University of Madison. It's a great little fun novel if people want to read it. So.
Okay.
Anyway, go back. But we do talk about this, and the idea is that go see Mom, go see Dad during this time, and do everyone a favor.
And not just older moms and dads, okay? You all know me. You've known me for many years. I'm very superstitious. The whole essence of everything I do is being planned and organized around your money. And I'm personally truly superstitious that if you've got everything organized, you will not be tempting fate. But that if you leave everything a mess when you walk out of the house.
No kidding.
Yes. I mean, I really personally am like this in terms of cleaning house before I leave town. I empty all the wastebaskets.
So you're put on clean clothes in case the police find you in a ditch.
Exactly. Yeah, right. No safety pins in your underwear kind of a thing.
Okay, good. I wasn't going to go there.
Personal financial organization is like that. It's a pain to do it. And most people leave it undone. It's not just the things you're supposed to do. Like, I'm astounded by how many young couples don't have a will or a revocable living trust or a plan for their children. You really want some bureaucrat at the state of Illinois deciding whether the life insurance should be paid out to child number one to go out of state to school or save for two children? I mean, who's going to be the custodian? So at the base, a will, a revocable living trust.
It's interesting you do that stuff to ward off bad things. I think a lot of people put those things off because they don't want to think about it. Yeah.
Right. But I'm giving you a different way to think about it. And usually one member of a family is the one that says, I'm not going to think about it. If I think about it, it'll mean I'm mortal. And the other person says, oh, no, it gets me nervous. So I'm giving you something to say to your spouse who says, I don't want to think about it. Say you're tempting fate. So once you've done things like made a list of your passwords, a list of your credit cards, the account numbers, and the toll-free number. When someone steals your wallet, you don't have the toll-free number to call to say, my card is stolen. So you know, I've been doing this forever. I mentioned it in my syndicated column, which you can always read at terrysavage.com, and I got over 3,000 signups in the last 2 days as it went in the Tribune and around the country. To click on my website, terrysavage.com, there's a pop-up box. Fill it out. You get a return email saying, yeah, this is not spam. And when you click, yes, I really want to sign up for my free When I'm in the Mood newsletter, then you get another email with a link to the organizer. Print it out. You could fill it out online and then print it out. It's safe, secure. And if something happened to you, who would know where all this stuff is? It's 4 pages. It's a list. It also gives you things to think about. What about the cemetery deed? What about separation military papers so you're entitled to a tombstone? All those kinds of things. Oh, gee, maybe we really should update our life insurance or get a checkup on it.
And the idea is Mother's Day is coming, so why not use that
holiday? Well, so it's hard to bring it up when you're taking mom out to brunch. So you can say, hey, Tommy and I, daughter and husband, have filled out this great personal financial organizer. We printed out a second one for you, mom and dad. And by the way, as I say, it's not just for elderly parents.
Right.
It's for everyone to have.
Well, I think that mom and dad would probably be pretty grateful for it, too, and a chance to because I think parents are more likely than their kids to say, I need to get this going.
I've had a lot of people respond to it and say, you know what, you kick me off the sit down and do nothing spot. And I have to tell you that my mother did this for me. She did not use my organizer form, but she had made a whole notebook about where everything was. And it was just such a great gift to my brothers.
Yeah, my mom has a death drawer at home.
I have one too.
All right, Terry, good to see you again. We'll check in next week.
Yes, I expect to be here alive and well, please.
I hope so. If not, everyone knows where your folder is, right?
Everybody knows where my folder is. There's a drawer, and yours should be in your drawer. And go to terrysavage.com. Sign up in the yellow box. It costs nothing. I give you a list to no one. Get the financial organizer by return email and print it out.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN 1237. All right, a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk about... we're going to talk to the president of Sigfox North America. Sigfox, I'm a little leery of all my pronunciations here because it's a French company. But what they do is they work on the Internet of Things. We've talked about that on the show where different appliances will talk to others. And they've got, I guess, like a low-power product that is just taking off. Anyway, they're here as part of Business France. They've got an event coming up this evening at 1871. So we'll talk about France, innovation, and how it fits with Frank Sennett. No, I mean with the U.S. of A. Frank Sennett is on a phone line from Crane Chicago Business. Frank, welcome back.
Thank you, buddy.
Hey, so I was teasing this Zillow story, and I love Zillow. I love to go on there and see what my home is valued. You ever do that? I mean, is that the sort of thing that you – is that how you spend your free time?
Yeah, and I've been doing a little house hunting lately, and, you know, sellers often hate it. Buyers love it because – they can say, well, Zillow told me this is worth $10,000 less than you're asking.
Yeah, and so,
it's a tough thing. Sometimes.
I just went on and looked at mine, and my house, well, I don't know if I should say this, but, it recovered wonderfully from the pit and from the crisis, but I've been losing value on my house for the last 2 years, and I don't know why that would be. I got to talk to Rodkin about that next time he's on. But if you go to Zillow.com, you can put in your address, and they will give you what they think your house would likely be appraised at. It's fun to do, as you said, unless you're a seller and you think it's worth more. And that's kind of what's happened up in Glenview.
Yeah, so there's an attorney, a real estate attorney, Barbara Anderson, is suing Zillow because she says that the Zestimate, which is what Zillow calls those estimates, is serves as an appraisal, which in the state of Illinois you have to abide by certain standards, licensing and letting the seller know and having their approval and all that kind of stuff. Zillow says it's all just for fun, but she's saying, well, your estimate is so low, it's hurting my ability to sell my house.
So the idea is
file the suit.
So would-be buyers are looking at the Zestimate and saying that she's asking too much.
Yeah, so she's trying to sell a place up in the Glen, in Glenview, and her asking price is $626,000. And Zillow's kind of rained on her parade and said, hey, our Zestimate is $555,000. And so buyers are coming in and saying, hey, lady, this website told me I should get it for a lot cheaper. And So she's a little annoyed by that.
It's not funny. I just get tickled every time I hear you say Zestimate. Do it again.
Zestimate.
Thank you for that. Okay, Zillow says, look, we make it clear. This isn't an official appraisal. They also say that in Chicago area homes, they come within 5% of the sale price 47% of the time. No, that's not right. Come within 5% of the eventual sale price. Oh, yeah, 47% of the time. Within 20%, 86% of the time. So, I mean, you know, 20% is a pretty wide margin, but that's fairly accurate.
Yeah, I mean, for half the time, they're really quite accurate. But I would say, you know, if I'm buying a house and I can get a 20% discount off the sale price, I'm telling all my friends about it over drinks. So, you know, just that 20%, that within 20% is not the best thing for sellers, I don't think. For buyers, again, you know, they tend to be low in this market with those estimates. And agents will tell you, you know, buyers will try to use that as leverage. But, you know, again, it is a free market. And people can ignore that if they want.
But the plaintiff in this case says, look, she wants a little privacy. She wants to be able to take her value off, her Zestimate off, if she feels that that she wants to. And it is sort of a, I don't know, is there a privacy issue here? I guess they're based on public sales and public tax records and all of that. But should my neighbors be able to go onto this website and find their estimate of what my house value is?
Yeah, in the world of big data, open data, those sorts of questions are coming up more and more often. I know some states have repressed gun registries, for instance, over similar concerns. So, yeah, this is a question. And she also says, look, if you don't want to do that, Zillow, if you can just price it the way I want you to price it, all good. So I like that. You know, like my house is worth $1 million.
$1 million. And Zillow says that she hasn't provided all the data that she needs to. So, and as I look at my Zestimate, apparently I haven't either. I haven't provided them anything, but they don't have everything that they should. So, okay, there's that. And let's hope she sells her house for a happy price. Let's come a little south to this North Branch development along the Chicago River and some of the aldermen there. Well, I don't know if they can stop this development, but it looks like they're going to try to slow it down a little bit. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so this is that area that used to be industrial that is now being redeveloped on the north branch of the Chicago River near, you know, all that mall stuff on Clybourne in the Halsted area. And the development plans in the city doesn't include enough open space, doesn't include enough park space, according to three aldermen who have jurisdiction over, you know, that development area and various parts of it.
If I'm going to interrupt you, Frank, but if you're driving outbound on the Kennedy, it's off to your right, kind of where the Metro stop is there, right? Or where Finkelsteel and all of that.
Yeah, it's the old Finkelsteel site, exactly.
Okay. And so they want more green space?
Yeah. Right. So they want at least 15 acres for, you know, baseball, soccer, skating, just sports and recreation. There are a lot more kids that live in this densely populated area, they're saying. And even if they can't officially put the kibosh on it, they also say by city tradition, they would have veto power over any developments approved in the framework, and they are willing to use that power if the city doesn't play ball. And the city's like, calm down,
right?
Take a look at our final plan. So I would guess that they're probably going to move a little bit in that direction. But if there's a showdown, you know, customarily the aldermen do have a lot of power in their wards to put the thumbs up or thumbs down to development. So this could get a little nasty.
You can understand if you're the city, you know, responsible for the tax rolls and things like that. You want green space, but damn, you want to increase the real estate tax as well.
Yeah, that's the whole rub here. I mean, the city is looking at this as, you know, very high dollar development. This is going to be incredibly popular property, likely, given the real estate we see around there, the development we see around there. There's a lot of high-end homes, a lot of high-end retail. So they want to maximize that. You're right. And the aldermen are just saying, you know, give us land, lots of land under starry skies above.
Well, they're not going to see the stars in that neighborhood. We all know that's true. John Pletz has a story at chicagobusiness.com about this startup, I guess, this technology company and their app or their product called NTouch. Which seems pretty cool to me. Explain to me what NTouch is.
So it's like social media for your care providers after you go through some kind of a medical situation, which you and I have both done in the past year or so.
Right.
This really rang true to me. You you know, if you have to see various specialists, et cetera, they give you a sheet of paper when you walk out and they say, here's how to take care of yourself, et cetera, et cetera. And it's easy to kind of get lost in a thicket of that kind of stuff. And so this NTouch is basically like a closed social media platform where you can get together with all these different providers and, you know, check in with them. Hey, my, you know, my leg's still turned green or whatever it is. And what should I do with that? Or, you know, what was the thing I was supposed to do with the meds again? And they're saying that the outcomes are much better. A lot fewer, you know, trips back to the hospital, a lot better health outcomes when there is that kind of network of support.
So if you have one doctor for this, the doctor that you have for that can also be monitoring the conversation with the other doctor so that there's more of a, I don't want to use, I hate the word holistic, but in a way there's more, it's more of a team effort. All it's not a bunch of silos. Everyone is sort of seeing things together real time.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've had this experience, but I have had it a few times, and this may ring true to listeners, where you go into a certain specialist and you say, here's what my internist told me about X.
Right.
I don't know why they said that. You know, like, well, you know, with this platform, they can dicker amongst themselves.
And not only that, Frank, I don't trust myself to tell them what the other doctor said. You know?
Yeah, because sometimes you're misinterpreting. Yeah, I'm sure.
Totally.
As well.
I don't understand what my daughter tells me to tell my wife. I'm not going to tell me, you know, what my surgeon tells me to tell my pulmonologist or something like that. All right, so
they end up taking off the wrong leg. You know,
it's happened before. All right, that is NTouch, and the name of the company, Prepared Health, and the story is that they are coming into money. Investors getting behind them. Frank Sennett, thanks very much for joining us. You can read more about these stories at ChicagoBusiness.com. We'll talk again soon.
Steve.
All right. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. All right, we talk a lot about the Internet of Things. We talk about trade and all of that, and we're going to mix all of those together today. Business France has an event at 1871 a little bit later this evening. 122 Illinois-based companies have operations in France. 150 French companies employ about 28,000 Illinoisans. So those are the people numbers. There are millions of dollars behind that. And to help us all understand all of that and a little bit more, Alan Proethis is the president of Sigfox North America. Alan, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Bring that mic a little closer to you. I'm sorry, I should have told you that. All right, so I don't detect a French accent, but there's a French connection. What's going on here?
Well, if I'm pressed for any French vocabulary, I'll fail immediately.
Oh, good. I'm going to do that.
But it's a great excuse to visit and take advantage of the great, not just culture, but the great technology coming out of France.
So how does Sigfox fit into, is it a French company?
It's a French headquartered company,
okay.
Actually outside of Toulouse.
Okay.
And it really right just down the street from Airbus. So it's a major technology area for France, and it's actually where there's hundreds of startups focusing on the Internet of Things. It's the main IoT focus area in France.
By the way, I know you're not from Chicago, but just don't drop the Airbus thing in Chicago because the Boeing people don't like it.
I'll make a point of that.
So we got this event at 1871, and Business France is like most government agencies or government entities have. You know, they've got an outreach arm, right? Is that mm-hmm. what Business France is?
Exactly. They're just trying to promote the advantages of American companies taking things to the market in France, and they actually help you do that. And they've done it quite successfully, as you mentioned, with hundreds of companies. At the same time, though, France, and I've personally hired over 50 people in the last 16 months, driven by a French company, all high-paying jobs of engineers and salespeople
right.
here in America as we build out our U.S. network.
How does France rate when it comes to technology innovation? I read something about how it's very easy to form a business in France, easier than in most countries.
It actually is. You know, people usually who comment about it haven't really had the experience there. Once you've experienced this, you have an incredible educational system in terms of spectacular engineers. And you also have really great strategic thought there. And if you look at all the companies, and in fact, one of my partners on the panel tonight is going to be an executive from J.C. Dussault, who you can see almost on every bus stop here
sure, yeah,
in
right
the city doing the advertising.
Right. In fact, right out the window here, they do the bus stop. And they were a little controversial when they came to town, by the way.
Oh, really?
Because people were worried about the beautiful Michigan Avenue view. And they've forgotten all about that. Okay. So there's that. And the idea of cooperation is Chicago. How does Chicago rank or Illinois rank when it comes into tapping into markets for France?
It actually is pretty strong, and I think it's getting stronger. I think they realize there's a lot of synergy. For 20 years, Chicago is a official sister city with Paris.
Right.
And Paris is actually, I think, number 4 in the world as smart cities go. And frankly, you know, Chicago is actually a French name. It was named after the Native American name for the wild garlic that grows in the area.
Wild onions here. All right, so tell me about Sig Fox then, because I'm interested. We talk about the Internet of Things, and it's one of those phrases that, you know, it becomes sort of, well, it's omnipresent, and people might lose the meaning of it. But what you guys are working on is sort of a power source to let my refrigerator talk to my TV, is it right? Something like that?
Yeah, except we can't prevent those fights when we're not in the room. But but basically, we're connecting all the simple things in the world. So we have all these great technologies like the phones in our pockets. But you probably charge your phone in the last 24 hours.
Right, right.
And the reason is phones were made for people. They're not really made for things. So we talk about connecting tens of billions of things, and our technology specializes. It's another wide area technology, so messages can be sent over long distances. But things that just whisper rather than shout data, things like your electric meter, your smoke detector, all these kind of your security system, things like this. And it's optimized for cost and it's optimized for battery where it can last 10 or 15 years in some use cases.
Because you're not becoming smarter if you're eating up a lot of energy to do it.
Well, it won't sustain itself. If you deploy something with the battery or with the usage that you have in your mobile phone, and who's going to run out and recharge a million soil sensors every Thursday?
Right.
You know, it just isn't really scalable.
Well, listen, Alan Parithis, welcome to Chicago. I hope you have a great event tonight.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
The president of Sig Fox North America. Good to see you.
All right. Thanks.